And a good Sunday morning. It is your Morning After podcast. Scott Gerard, Hans Olsen, Lloyd Cole, as we recap another busy weekend of college football. BYU rolls as we expect. Utah does as well. Utah State gets rolled by Boise State. We'll break it all down. And I guess, first off, gentlemen, we probably need to start with a game that didn't involve any of the three teams. What happened to Oregon? Oregon loses, and now things look a little bit more precarious in the Pac-12. Hans, how shocked were you to see the outcome of that game?
I was blown away to watch Arizona State do that to Oregon. And I got to watch that game because we were surrounded by TVs. It was actually an amazing night. Had Oregon going, had the Jazz game, had Utah State, had Utah. It was crazy, but we all got laser focused on the end of that Oregon-Arizona State game. And I'll tell you what, guys, Herbert could not throw it to his own guys in the second half of that game.
That's a problem.
I think he threw three picks, but there were literally six balls in the second half that should have been intercepted. And I don't know what he was seeing. I don't know what Arizona State was doing, but they were getting in front of those passes and they were grabbing interceptions and it was leading to scores. And then that Arizona State quarterback that we just saw flop and flail and was terrible against Utah, he threw for nearly 400 yards against Oregon. So, I don't know, man. It just felt like I was sitting there thinking, man, this is so Pac-12. And then I watched Washington, Colorado, and Colorado finishes off Washington like the back end of a turkey leg on Thanksgiving Day. And I'm thinking, what is this conference all about right now? It's just wacky.
Well, and it just goes to show you how remarkable Utah has been, because outside of that game against USC, they're not allowing teams not only to challenge them and maybe get the upset, they're just dominating every single team they play, especially from a defensive standpoint. They get another huge performance en route to a 35-7 victory.
How about Zach Moss going off with 200 rushing yards? Like, I think it was probably pretty close to dang near 240 overall. Yards overall with him. That guy ran surprisingly with how well he was running it. I mean, I expected that game felt like it was 28-0 at halftime, but yet you looked at it and it was only 14. I mean, granted, they got stopped at the goal line. They should have got that one in. But Zach Moss was, as he has been all year long, was unbelievable. And Tyler Huntley was, I think he only had maybe one incompletion by halftime, maybe two, if even that. Overall, I mean, he had, I'm not sure what he was looking at on that interception that he had. That was his one real error. But the game actually, it felt like they beat him by a lot more than they did. And granted, 28 points is still a lot, but I mean, they covered the 24, but it seemed like they beat him a lot worse than they did. Am I wrong?
No. So, Lloyd, the interception you're talking about, Kyle Whittingham addressed it afterwards. And he said it was a route mix-up. And Frank actually broke it down in the post-game, talking about where the defender was sitting in the end zone and talking about the position of the receiver. And he said something was confused here because you don't put the ball, you don't run the route here, or you don't put the ball here, because that route tree was confused. And the first thing Kyle Whittingham addressed in the post game was the breakdown of the route.
It did look like a Tyler Huntley error. Last year, maybe Tyler Huntley makes that mistake, and it's on Tyler Huntley, something like that. But this year, yeah. Tyler Huntley doesn't. Yeah, I mean, his two interceptions this year are plays that are actually exactly like one another. I mean, right to the guy where you think there's probably some sort of error with the route.
Well, and that's how good he's been. A lot of the incomplete passes, I think, what did he have? Four incomplete last week?
Well, yeah,
four. And I went back.
Four incomplete last week, and then technically four, one of those being interception. Ball hit the ground only three times for Tyler Huntley.
See, unbelievable. And I went back and, you know, you look at the incomplete passes, and I think two of the four were drop balls, or maybe three of the four were drop balls. So he's putting it where it's supposed to be. And he was incredible last night. Zach Moss was incredible last night. And Arizona was outmatched. And Andy Ludwig is brilliant. I sent out this tweet yesterday. And Scott and Lloyd, do you guys remember going back to 2017? The three of us just sit around and just look at each other like, how did Tyler Huntley have 24 carries in this game? And then the next game, 26. And then what did he have, like 25 carries in that bowl game? And we're like, how did he ended up with, oh man, I think it was 132 carries in 2017 through nine games. He's through 10 games this year, and he's got 60. So end up an extra game and less than half the carries, and look at his production jump, and look at his NFL hopes jump, and look at his wins and losses jump. And it's like, remember I used to just beat this drum of, why do you not develop an NFL level quarterback that sits in a pocket, stays upright, stays healthy? Why do you got to have him rushing 18, 20 times a game? And I think the most brilliant thing that Ludwig has done is developed Huntley as a passing, healthy quarterback.
And he, last year he always looked to run. It felt like always he would look at one guy and see if he was open. If he wasn't open, it was like, okay, I'm running. I'm gone. And he just had happy feet. But this year, he looks comfortable as can be in there. You see him bounce around. He has great feel in the pocket. When he senses a little bit of pressure, he moves away from the pressure. It's been, and he's always looking downfield. He's never looking to run. And then finally, when that timer goes off in his head, and then he's like, okay, I got to get out of here, or something bad is going to happen. And that's when he scrambles.
You know, the one thing that I've heard Andy Ludwig get a lot of credit for is that he's been able to manipulate defenses so well that it hasn't made Tyler Huntley have to make a lot of decisions. And to where guys are open, guys are, they're scheming so well that Tyler Huntley, that first read is usually open. And the second read is usually open. And Tyler's done a better job even in route progression himself. But also, they've taken a lot of responsibility, a lot of the decision-making. They haven't loaded him up with decisions. They haven't loaded him up with a lot of different concepts. They've given him great plays, and they've schemed in such a way that Tyler Huntley, usually that first or second option, is available. It's open, and he's done a great job delivering it where it needs to be. And, I mean, it has been a beautiful relationship with Andy Ludwig, and Andy deserves a ton of credit. Tyler deserves so much love for his development as a quarterback. Never in a million years did I think he'd get at this point in his career where he's such a dynamic passer, a playmaker, and frankly, as accurate as he's been. He deserves all the accolades he's getting, but Andy Ludwig deserves a ton of love as well.
What changed hands? Real quick, sorry. What has changed with Andy Ludwig that has... Is it just growth as an individual, as he's been at different places and learned new things? Because let's be honest, we brought up Andy Ludwig of 2008, or 2007, whatever, in that frame. Granted, they won a Sugar Bowl in 2008, but where you were like what is that? I mean, I'm talking a reverse at the 1 yard line, those type of things. And when we saw something similar to that, I remember them being at the 1 yard line. I think it might have been their second game of the year, and they did an end around, and then you're kind of like, why don't you just, you got Zach Moss, but and it's worked like that. There's something different, like his amount of balance of run and hitting different players, different receivers. I mean, using Keithy as essentially a running back. I mean, that's a wrinkle we haven't seen, and that was a beautiful thing. He had two touchdowns on the ground. I mean, what is it with Andy Ludwig that has turned into what he is now?
I think a lot of it's just experience, man, and it's reps and calling and experience, and it's also confidence in a running back. And you can build and do so much when you've got a running back that you're confident with. If you take a look back at those years we were talking about, 2017, you remember coming out of games and Tyler Hunt would have more carries than Zach Moss, and you're like, wait, what? How did that happen? And then you go look, and Zach Moss is pulling the ball out of Huntley's chest, and you see Huntley take two steps and he's looking around like, are you kidding me? You just took the ball out of my chest again. I think when he came in, talking about Andy Ludwig, I think he looked at the film and said, I've got a running back that can take it 25 times and give me 200 yards. I've got a quarterback, and I'm seeing mechanics that I can work with, put him in a pocket, and I can work off of this run game. So, but I think he felt like he had the pieces that he could work with, and then just has gone to work with it. And I do know he's a worker. The other thing is, he's used little wrinkles. Last week against UCLA, we saw Keithy score on that slip screen out of the bunch set,
right?
Where it basically just slips underneath those two interior receivers. Well, now he takes Keithy, moves him to the other side, puts Simpkins at that position, runs the same slip screen, and you've got Arizona keying on Keithy in the red zone. And Simpkins just slips under, grabs that slip screen, and he's in for a touchdown. So he's just, I don't know, man, like you watch shooters when they can't miss and that they say the basket looks like it's five times wider than it usually is. And I feel like he's in the mode of what he has to work with, and he's using it all. And then I think teams are perplexed with what they can do. Arizona in the red zone, Scotty and Lloyd, they were moving eight and nine guys into the box. They were doing everything they could to stop Moss, and you had Ludwig just working his magic off the edges. It was impressive. It was, man. And they caught Arizona in a lot of slants, and they were using cutback lanes. And you could just tell that Ludwig had Arizona locked in. And now a Colorado team coming off this Washington win, it's going to be the same. They'll beat Colorado 38-7, 38-3. 38-0 possibly. That's just what they're doing right now.
Well, and they're going to need to as well, because Oregon isn't certainly going to help them, because now that Pac-12 championship game is going to feature Utah and Oregon, with Oregon not at 11-1, but most likely 10-2. And now you're looking at a situation where if Utah loses that game, Oregon's not going to the college football playoff, obviously. So that means Utah definitely has to beat Oregon and has to, frankly, beat them convincingly to go in at 12-1 and make a case to the college football playoff. But that game now all of a sudden lost a little bit of its luster because of that Oregon loss. So now Utah certainly has to take care of business. And now they definitely have to beat Oregon in that Pac-12 championship game, because the consolation prize in that game is now not the Rose Bowl for the University of Utah.
They will, this is my early prediction, barring some sort of injury to Huntley, they will, I guarantee they will win by more than 10 points.
They will curb stomp them. Yeah.
They will curb stomp. I'm sorry. You know what has always been Oregon's biggest Achilles heel has been going up against a physical team. How many times have they struggled against like a Stanford? And I know we're getting ahead because Utah still has Colorado, but they're going to curb stomp Colorado as well.
Yeah.
But Utah is that. I mean, they're that Stanford team, but with a more potent offense. They're that physical Stanford team that was so good that went into all those Rose Bowls and typically had their way. You know, was able to beat Oregon. Oregon doesn't do all that great with physical teams. I mean, you know, they should have beat Auburn, and that's about as physical as you get right there. But there's something, but they didn't. Or Auburn doesn't have the offense that Utah has. They you know what? They will win by more than two touchdowns, by more than 14 points. I guarantee it. I'm not even kidding. That's how much confidence I think I have in this Utah team right now.
Well, I don't know
how soft I think Oregon is.
I don't know if he said it on the air, off the air, Hans, but Ron McBride, and I'm fine sharing this because he would certainly say it on the air. Ron McBride told us on Friday, he goes, because we mentioned something about playing Oregon, he goes, oh, they'll destroy Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. Ron McBride is very high on Utah, and this was before Oregon lost to Arizona State. He's not been impressed with Oregon, and he's been saying all along Utah's going to win that game.
Yep. I have no worries with that game.
By the way, do we have any word on Brian Thompson?
Yeah, Kyle Whittingham in the post game says it's not serious.
Not serious? Mm-hmm. Just an ankle sprain?
Yeah.
High ankle sprain surgery. He'll be back next week.
No, he didn't specify. It looked like it was a knee issue because they were doing a knee stability test on him on the field. But Whit would have said he's done for the season. And when you look at, you just got Colorado and then Oregon in the Pac-12 championship, it's not a lot of time left. So I think it must be fairly minor. And I'm hoping to see him back, at minimum, see him back for the Pac-12 championship game.
All right, next up, I'll admit it. I have not had a chance to see much out of the BYU game outside of highlights with all the preparation and stuff for the Utah State game. But I don't think I really need to see much out of that game. What was it, 49-0 at halftime? And BYU ends up rolling, as they should, against a really bad UMass team. BYU could have scored 90. Could have scored 100 on that team had they wanted to. That's how bad UMass is. And BYU had a lot of injuries, and they were moving guys around yesterday, but didn't really matter when you play a team like that. And it was just smooth sailing for the Cougars against probably the worst team in FBS football right now.
I want to get a picture. JCW's on a table. You've got, don't call me Alex Kyle. You've got Will Snowden.
No, I think you flip-flopped that. Don't call me
Kyle. Yeah, you did. You did. It's real Kyle. I think you had real Kyle.
and me. And we had a little laptop with Flow Sports running. Somehow Kyle rigged it and got it up and running. And the three of us are kind of shoulder-to-shoulder packed in trying to watch this BYU game. Where all these people are coming through grabbing a JCW's burger, and I'm sitting there thinking, is this real life? Like, here we are in 2019, and I'm watching this on a portable computer, and Kyle had to pay $30 for it. And I felt bad for him, but not really.
Wait, hold on, you can't just gloss over that.
You made Kyle pay for it?
No, you did not.
That's like 7 hours of work for him.
You did not.
Oh, no.
Stop it.
Oh, no.
So, anyways, we watched the BYU game on that.
Hands, no.
And
you are the worst. You are the worst.
Can we not squabble over who paid for what?
I'm sorry.
And
the guy works like 10 hours a week.
He's a good kid. He did it on his own time. He took the initiative.
That's where you take out your car. You can, no, I got this. Don't worry about it.
I will,
Kyle. I've got this.
Oh boy.
What if Amanda had went to pay? If you took Amanda out and she went to pay, you wouldn't have let her pay, would you? You would have said, this is like, say, your first date. You would have said, no, I got this.
No,
you wouldn't have made Amanda pay on the first date, would you?
It just depends. I mean, it really just depends on the moment.
You did make her pay on your first date. Oh, my God.
No, I just didn't eat. And
it was a Wallabies, and you guys had that arrangement, right?
I did have a little bit of help here and there. I'm not going to lie.
I'm disgusted by you right now, but let's get on to the game. I'm disgusted.
So
we're going to need to discuss this on Monday.
So have you guys, I want you to really think about this. Think about all your football viewing in your entire life. Have you ever seen a 42-point quarter?
I think Utah State may have had one last year. But that's,
did they have a 42-point quarter last year?
Last year they were up, they scored 50 in the first half against New Mexico. They were plus 50, but I can't remember the quarter breakdown on that.
I was shocked by the level of inability of UMass in the second quarter. And then I was also very pleased with the execution. Guys, remember I said there was a couple things I wanted to see out of this UMass game. I wanted to see the pre-snap penalties and the post-whistle penalties cut out. They had one penalty for 10 yards in the first three quarters of that game. And then they put in the second string guys and they may have got one or two more. But it was clean. And that showed me that the coaches paid attention to that. I said I wanted to see a clean pocket, no inside beats. And the pocket was clean. There was no inside beats, great one-on-ones, and no mismanagement of assignments. No mental errors, which was really nice through the first three quarters. I wanted to see good releases, good timing from Zach Wilson, and we saw it. I wanted to see a sustained drive, and we saw it. So I just went right down the checklist, and I got to see everything I needed to see to feel confident that they're going to put up a very good fight against San Diego State. But this is going to be an evenly matched game, and it's going to be a dogfight, and they're going to have to show that heart they showed earlier in the season when they got a couple of overtime wins.
San Diego State. By the way, San Diego State wet the bed a little bit on the road. They lost to Hawaii, so now Hawaii wins the division. And
how about that?
Hawaii will be playing Boise State in the Mountain West Conference Championship game.
What's more, Jack, the Mountain West Conference or the Pac-12?
Oh, geez. That's crazy. And then Boise might be your group of, and we'll talk about Boise here in a second. I think Boise still is laying claim to being your Mountain West, or your group of five team. And I think they got a really good chance. They've got some work to do, and Memphis and Cincinnati might have something to say about that. But right now you're looking at Boise playing really well, and they will curb stomp Hawaii in that game. Hawaii's got to go to Boise in the middle in early December. That ain't gonna work well for him.
Nope.
So, but yeah, back to BYU. They just did everything you were expecting them to do, but to your point, they look good doing it. And that's the most important thing, is that there wasn't a letdown. There wasn't any of that. Your first stringers not playing well, or little nitpicking things that you were able to point out against Idaho State. I didn't see a lot of that in that game against UMass.
Correct. Yeah. That was exactly what I needed to see. And then I saw a lot of youth. I saw a lot of young guys who were getting looks and opportunities. And I was worried for a minute. Jackson McChesney, who is, four string running back.
Yeah.
And basically with the Supa down and Tyson Williams down and everything that's happened to that running back position, they've been using Jackson McChesney. And he went down hard and grabbed his knee, and it looked bad, and he limped off and couldn't put weight on it, and then he came back a few plays later and went for like a 35-yard run, and I was like, what just happened? Because it looked blown, and the next thing I know, he's on the field just going crazy. He may have some soreness. I hope he can be ready for San Diego State, because Jackson McChesney looked really good, and they've had to take Tyler Allgeier. Have you guys ever seen in a season, have you seen a guy lead the team in tackles and then flip to the other side and lead a team in rushing yards? Because Allgeier has a chance to do that. He led the team in tackles against, I think it was Boise State. And now he's back at the running back position, having to carry a certain load for them. So, you're just seeing guys do extraordinary things to try to keep this team afloat right now.
Will had to be smiling ear from ear to ear with Jackson McChesney going off for 228 yards and two touchdowns.
Oh, yeah. No, he was
big on it. He's been big on him because he's one of his guys. And so that was good. That was good to see him go off like that.
Yeah, he was happy. And then last thing on the BYU game, I gave J.J. and Wigley a really tough time last week against Idaho State because there were some times he got bullied. So BYU was pushed all the way back to their own 1-yard line. It was actually probably a foot and a half yard line. And JJ and Louie, off the one technique, blew through on a fourth and a foot and a half and goal, and got a tackle for a loss and stopped the drive. So it was fun to see him have some good senior moments yesterday. He played much better against UMass, which was nice to see.
So BYU gets that W, gets set for a big one against San Diego State. That San Diego State defense they're legit. That's a really, really good defense. That'll be a fun test to see how Zach Wilson does against that defense. And they've got a middle linebacker hands, I'm sure, as you look at film coming up this week. Kind of playing that old Lobo back, that same position Brian Urlacher played back in the day, who I think is really, really good. And I'm curious, and I'm excited for you to get some eyes on him, see what you think out of him. But he's a really good player, and this will be a good test for BYU in that offense. I think BYU should win. BYU's defense, I think, will look great because San Diego State's offense is not good, and their quarterback is a poverty-stricken Johnny Manziel. I can't even say a poor man's Johnny Manziel. He runs around, and he'll make a decent play here and there with his feet, but for the most part,
poverty-stricken. Can't even see poor man. Like, this guy, he's been bankrupt.
No, this guy is a dude asking for change outside of a Maverick version of.
Oh, jeez.
<That's rough. laughs>
Sorry. Too far.
Feel good, Scotty? You feel good about that?
I'm just trying
to. I am excited. I'm excited to see a good matchup again for BYU. All right.
Sorry, I may not have come out the way it should have. I apologize.
That's all right.
All right, and then finally, Utah State. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I did not see that coming. I thought they'd play much better. I thought they'd turn the corner defensively in Boise State, and it was just had that same feel of Air Force and BYU, where defensively they were just a sieve. Boise had a third-string quarterback who did not need to really throw the ball down the field. They gave him a bunch of passing yards, but it was off of those fly sweeps where you just pitch it to your motion man who's coming in motion that technically is labeled as a pass. But Boise had over 300 yards rushing, and Utah State couldn't stop. Just defensively could not get stops. And offensively, after Jordan Love threw another pick six, it was just it was a rough night. And again, it was just one of those performances. Hans, you and I were texting back and forth. In a big game like that, when you've got a lot on the line, a chance to share a division title, and you go out and have a performance like that, it's just a bit of a head scratcher. Like, I can't wrap my brain around why that team played as poorly as they did last night.
It was crazy because there was a minute there in the first quarter where it was basically back-to-back catches, one by Tompkins that was, I don't know, man. It was two of the most brilliant catches I've seen. I actually had to send a tweet. I think it was Devin Tompkins trapped the football between the defender's arm and his hand and came down with it, kept it off the ground for like a 47-yard gain. And then Caleb Rep in the end zone reaches up with the offhand, the backside offhand, and one hands a catch and touches a toe down. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, Utah State, man, here they come. And then that was it. They just flatlined. And it was really troubling to see the pressure. It was troubling to see Love hold on to the ball as long as he was holding on to it. I felt like he wanted to be patient, but his delivery wasn't crisp. It wasn't coming out quick. He was spending too much time in the pocket, which then created pressure. And then the run game fell flat that was so reliable early on in the season. And it was a cluster to watch that game.
Yep. That's
definitely thought they'd have a better showing, you know. Wasn't sure if they were going to be able to, you know, to beat Boise because Boise's so tough, but at home, like, you gotta have a little bit better showing, you know, defensively.
Yeah.
And by that way, that catch, that touchdown catch, that made it on that went national. I think it was on I think it was on ESPN, you know, NFL show or whatever, and you got Moss. I think it's one of Randy Moss's little things that he does or whatever. But That catch got some national attention. That was an unbelievable catch, but that's definitely a disappointing performance for Utah State defense. You know, with so much on the line, I would have thought there would have been just a little bit more fire there.
Yeah, well, they get a chance to go to New Mexico next week. That'll be probably another W. That gives them 7 on the regular season, and then potentially 8 with a bowl game. And so there's still some games to be played for Utah State. But you know, look, we knew it was going to be a bit of a season of transition. I think this offensive line, I mean, you had your third string right tackle going up against Curtis Weaver, and Hans, there were probably about 3 or 4 plays where he didn't even get a hand on him. I mean, it was just, it was bad.
I saw those plays, Scotty. They were running some good stunts too. They knew that they could confuse him, and they were putting Weaver wide, and they were running their 3 technique out across that freshman's face and bringing Weaver on kind of a loop stunt. And those plays, some of those ones where they didn't get a hand on him, it was well-scripted stunts to take advantage of a young kid. So, Scotty, are you telling me in this game there was a defensive touchdown for Boise State? There was a special teams touchdown for Boise State? And that's frustrating.
They hit for the cycle. And Utah State knew they had to be perfect in – well, not perfect, but they had to be great in offense, defense, and special teams. And frankly, all 3 areas really let them down in that game. And it was unfortunate to watch. There's no doubt about it. So Utah State licking their wounds a little bit, only their 2nd conference loss. But that means that their bowl games probably took a little bit of a hit on that one. And who knows, Hans, you may be you and I may be up in Boise calling a game for Utah State in the Potato Bowl coming up in early January. It might be fun for the show, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate that at all. I'd love to go back to Boise and call that bowl game and have Utah State in it. It would be entertaining for me, and it'd be nice for fans and Logan to get up to that bowl game. It's close, convenient. It's easy. I think they do a great job with it, Scotty.
I do, too.
I wanted to give a shout out to Weber State, man.
Oh, yeah.
You see Montana. Montana State took care of Montana. Weber State destroyed Idaho State. By the way, you called the Montana State win over Montana, and Montana State boat raced them, like 47-14 or something. So took care of them. And Jay Hill is this third year in a row, grabs at least a share of the Big Sky title. I was looking at this. They have not lost a regular season home game since October of 2017.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's dominant, man. He's turned things around, and I'm really proud of that Weber State team. Really happy for Jay and that assistant staff. There's some really good guys there, including Dave Schramm, who came in to coordinate, and he's a great coach, great guy. Joe Dell, a couple of other former Utah guys, a Ganther is up there, and they've put out a fantastic product, and I was really happy to see them get a share of that Big Sky title.
Yeah, and by the way, what Jay's done at Weber State and the building project that he had to go through to get that program back up, Jerry Bovee with a smart hire and bringing him in and then allowing him to do his thing, and he's been great. And back-to-back-to-back, at least a share of the conference title, it's just remarkable. And, again, cannot be more happy for them and more happy for that crew up there. And they'll be in the playoffs. And I think they'll do some damage once they get there in that FCS playoff run.
I hope so.
Yep. All right, gentlemen, that wraps it up. Another edition of your Morning After podcast. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, and Lloyd Cole. And we'll do it all again tomorrow. Remember, show kicks off at noon. We will break it all down for you. You'll also hear from Kalani Sitake. You'll hear from Kyle Whittingham. Show kicks off at noon. Hans and Scotty, Lloyd Cole. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and 1280thezone.com.